The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at 12:31 a.m. September 1st, 2017. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
Resist!
Thank you for listening to K-Voice of Resistance. That's the letter K, Voice of Resistance. I'm your host, Kelly. For how long have white guys been putting women, especially black women, in their place or denying them a place altogether? Forever, right? Well, Steven Mnuchin, United States Treasury Secretary, slavery enthusiast, and melodrama villain who likes to tie damsels in distress to the tracks of the Underground Railroad, seems to have decided that Harriet Tubman's place may not be on the $20 bill, as was promised by the previous administration. You know,
the good administration.
Was it too much to ask to put a black woman on a bill? She would be replacing Jackson, the dumbass president who loved slavery and was behind the Indian Removal Act and the Trail of Tears. You may have heard of it. Andrew Jackson's campaigns to force at least 46,000 Native American men, women, and children to march west, sometimes freezing to death or starving because the U.S. soldiers wouldn't let them bring extra food or blankets. The Choctaw lost up to a third of its population on the death march. Ethnic cleansing at the insistence of an American president. No wonder he's Donald's favorite president. Donald has him proudly displayed in gold on the wall of the White House. Jackson's racist policies were even controversial in his time, and that's saying something. After the Indian Removal Act only narrowly passed Congress, an 1832 Supreme Court ruling declared it unconstitutional. He doesn't belong on our money. Harriet Tubman, in contrast, is an American hero. Harriet Tubman, abolitionist on the Underground Railroad during the 1850s. She was born a slave field hand and endured brutal beatings at the hands of men like Jackson. She fled slavery in 1849, leaving her husband and family behind in order to escape. There was a bounty on her head, and still she returned to the South at least 19 times to lead her family and hundreds of slaves to freedom via the Underground Railroad. And she didn't stop there. Tubman's resistance to slavery did not end with the outbreak of the Civil War. Her services as a nurse, scout, and spy were solicited by the Union government. For more than 3 years, she nursed the sick and wounded in Florida and the Carolinas, tending white and black soldiers and contrabands. She deserves schools named after her and monuments across America. She is the best of America, yet the Republican administration wants to continue to honor Donnie Tic Tac's hero, Jackson. And Jackson deserves to be relegated to the backs of history books under the section called American Shame. This is your resistance podcast, where we talk all things resistance, news, and other important topics of the day. And I usually rant a little bit, because, you know, because there's plenty to rant about right now. So, in a moving show of resistance in Charlottesville, Virginia, the coalition of community members, students, and clergy organized a 10-day, 112-mile march from Charlottesville to Washington, D.C., which began this past Monday on the 28th. In D.C., they plan to engage in a sustained civil disobedience campaign and demand that the lone deranger, Donald, be removed from office. The marchers plan to stop at various Confederate monuments along their route before arriving in D.C. on September 6th. Their site says, quote, "We march to confront white supremacy. We are marching from Charlottesville to Washington, D.C. to demonstrate our commitment to confronting white supremacy wherever it is found. It is clear that we can no longer wait for Donald Trump or any other elected official to face this reality and lead. We are coming together to reckon with America's long history of white supremacy so that we can begin to heal the wounds of our nation. We march for justice and equality. For years, white supremacist violent rhetoric and policies have escalated and intensified, exploding during Donald Trump's run for president and reaching a boiling point in Charlottesville as courageous people of moral conscience stood up to an army of white nationalists, neo-Nazis, and members of the KKK. This is the time for us to stand up for justice and equality. This is the time to confront white supremacy in our government and throughout our history. We demand that President Trump be removed from office for aligning himself with this ideology of hate. And we demand an agenda that repairs the damage it's done to our community and its people. Unquote. Several organizations have already signed on as March partners, including Action Group Network, Color of Change, the March for Racial Justice, Million Hoodies Movement for Justice, the Women's March, and Movement for Black Lives. I love how those pathetic, frightened, hateful cowards marched in Charlottesville to inspire their movement, but instead they inspired ours. I love that they were protesting the removal of their precious statues of hate, erected to glorify treason, only to spur a nationwide movement to take them down. We are not the equal and opposite reaction to them. We are the dominant and opposite reaction. Then again, they do have the White House. And a lot of Congress. Well, whatever. We're still as intimidating as hell. And we need to continue to be. We need more actions like this. Because just as the country began healing, here comes a hateful, vengeful, medieval, and distinctly unholy Nashville statement. The Nashville Statement, a 14-point manifesto on biblical sexuality. It was released on Tuesday by 150 evangelical Christians of the Council on Biblical Manhood and Womanhood, CBMW. They convened earlier this month in Nashville. The CBMW affirmed their belief that homosexual or transgender self-conception is a sin and an abomination, a ruinous departure from Christian faithfulness and witness, as is premarital sex. The only okay sex is married sex, between a man and a woman, of course. If any of you are having fun out there or falling in love wrong, hell awaits you.
As it should.
Activist and pastor John Pavlovitz, he's pretty awesome, well worth a follow, wrote a rebuttal to the statement with soaring prose. Quote, "We've made this statement because those still listening to our message aren't interested in loving their neighbors as themselves, or caring for the least, or welcoming the outsider, or any of that annoying Jesus stuff. But because we are at the precipice of extinction and just want an enemy to wage war with, in order to maintain that intoxicating rush of superiority and small dose of control that we've grown addicted to and are rapidly losing, we are preaching hard to what's left of our hateful choir. Lesson learned? The choir is there, but the resistance is louder." Unquote. More from the Department of American Racism. Let's talk about DACA. 800,000 people are now possibly facing deportation if President Rancid Velveeta pulls the plug on a program that protects undocumented immigrants who were brought here to the United States as children. These 800,000 outed themselves to the government under the promise of protection from the government under President Barack Obama. The program, of course, is called DACA.
DACA. Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. It's relief from deportation and work authorization, renewed every 2 years for those brought to America as children illegally. To qualify, you must arrive before 16th birthday, lived in U.S. continuously since 2007, exhausting criminal background check and fingerprinting. You must currently be in school, a high school graduate, or a military veteran. Those that fail are eligible for deportation. What does America get? 750,000 people are out of the shadows and fully contributing, working legally, paying taxes. What is our choice? End the program, either all at once or by barring renewals. See everyone deported and a $500 billion loss to our economy. Or continue to provide a system that allows those brought here as children who have no home country other than America to continue to work, pay taxes, and contribute. Learn more.
The economic benefits of DACA are clear. With DACA in effect, recipients are getting higher levels of education and using their skills and training to get better jobs. This means higher wages, more tax revenue. According to the 2016 Center for American Progress study, recipients are also buying cars and houses and starting new businesses, all of which means more tax revenue to the cities and states across the country. Should the program be terminated, however, the losses would be devastating. The same study estimates that ending DACA would reduce the nation's GDP by $433.4 billion over a decade. Another study by the same Immigrant Legal Resource Center states that 685,195 young immigrants would become unemployed immediately, causing employers to incur $3.4 billion in costs associated with the termination and replacement of employees. Without DACA, tax revenue would be seriously impacted over the next decade. $24.6 billion in Social Security and Medicare contributions would be lost. Texas, who led the charge with 10 other states in suing the DOJ to end the program, Texas itself, waterlogged Texas that is already suffering financially, stands to lose $460.3 billion over the next decade should DACA-authorized workers be removed.
Idiotic bigots.
Now, it is up to Congress to defend DACA. Luckily, there are those out there working for that very goal, and some from surprising corners.
Lindsey Graham.
I've stopped letting 30% of the people who are mad about immigration determine how I behave. To those who feel like you should deport these kids, boy, I couldn't disagree with you more. These DACA kids have come out of the shadows at the invitation of their government. And their legal standing is now in question. It becomes, I think, almost a moral decision. To the DREAM Act population, I'm excited about giving you a chance to live the rest of your life in America. I'm excited about taking this burden off your back. I embrace you. I want you to succeed. The question for the Republican Party is, what do we tell these people? How do we treat them? Here's my answer. We treat them fairly. So did President Trump. You're going to have to make a decision. The campaign is over. To the Republican Party. Who are we? What do we believe? The moment of reckoning is coming. When they write the history of these times, I'm going to be with these kids.
Now it is up to Congress to defend DACA recipients against Donald and Jefferson Beauregard Sessions' threats. On July 20th, Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, and Dick Durbin, Democrat of Illinois, introduced the DREAM Act, S-1615, a bipartisan bill that would grant legal status and a path to citizenship for DACA participants. In the House, Democrats have introduced a slightly more generous bill, the American Hope Act, H.R. 3591, which would also grant DACA recipients conditional legal status. Congress must quickly move to support and pass a legislative solution to protect DREAMers, whatever it be.
Call to action.
Call to action.
Call to actions.
Calls to action.
Call to action.
Call your representative today and tell them you support DREAMers. You can call them directly, or you can call them at their switchboard at 202-225-3121. That's 202-225-3121. And that is today's call to action. More from Racism in America and more from Texas. The courts have proved to be in the resistance once again. And the courts in Texas, nonetheless. They smacked down a law that would have gone into effect September 1st, known as SB 4, a sanctuary cities law.
The Houston police are celebrating.
What this bill did was it took the power from cities and counties to make their own laws. And they wouldn't let them adopt policies that would limit immigration enforcement and required them to cooperate with detainer requests, which allow foreign-born detainees to be transferred to federal custody after they are released from state or local custody. This allows police officers to question the immigration status of anyone they detain or arrest. Finally, it threatens police officials to violate the law with fines, jail time, and removal from office. The judge blocked all but one of these provisions. He allowed that officers could question anyone arrested or detained about their immigration status, only to pass the information along to federal authorities. The fines, threats of criminal charges, and removal from office included in the law were ruled by the judge to be a violation of local official rights to free speech, protected under the First Amendment.
Ha! Constitution, bitches!
Opponents of the law include the mayors and police chiefs of the four largest cities in the state, Houston, San Antonio, Dallas, and Austin. Because they're smart, they know sanctuary cities keep them safe. Fear of detention has become so rampant that in the midst of the worst of Hurricane Harvey, local officials had to broadcast via Twitter that they would not ask anyone shelters their immigration status. Senate Bill 4 would have led to rampant discrimination and made communities less safe. That is why police chiefs and mayors themselves were among the harshest critics. This makes Governor Greg Abbott sad. All right, off the topic of racism for a minute. According to the Department of Health and Human Services, our president wants the American people to suffer and even die. Well, kind of. Taking a big step towards undermining the Obamacare exchanges for 2018, the budget for outreach to encourage people to sign up for the 2018 insurance through Obamacare exchanges will be sliced by a total of, get this, $116.5 million. Typically, the Obama administration poured money into outreach during the open enrollment period, the few months out of the year that people could sign up for health insurance for the coming year, to help get as many people covered as possible.
The race to open enrollment is on.
But the budget for advertisements encouraging enrollment will be reduced dramatically this year to $10 million, down from $100 million in 2016. According to HHS, additionally, the budget for the Navigator program, which trains people to assist others in signing up for coverage, will be cut to $36 million from $62.5 million. This blows because increasing enrollment is a big step to ensure that younger, healthier people sign up for coverage. This not only provides them with insurance, but it helps balance out the high risk pool, keeps costs down for all enrollees, and mitigates losses for insurers participating in the exchanges.
It's going to sabotage this thing one way or another, the vindictive jackass.
If enrollment declines, it could lead to higher cost for Americans and an uptick in the uninsured rate. He and his Republican administration already slashed the length of open enrollment in half. It is now from November 1st to December 15th, and past year's open enrollment ran from the start of November to the end of January. Yet another way that Donald and his GOP will tank Obamacare. Additionally, former HHS secretaries from both parties have urged Republicans to move quickly to stabilize Obamacare as Donald threatens to continue withholding key payments to insurers. Another more direct way to sabotage the exchanges. We have some good news coming at us from the world of science. The Food and Drug Administration on Wednesday approved a futuristic new approach to treating cancer, clearing a Novartis therapy that has produced unprecedented results in patients with a rare and deadly cancer. How much do you want to bet the right will choose to believe in this science? The therapy is called CART, C-A-R-T. It is made by harvesting patients' white blood cells and rewiring them to home in on tumors. Novartis' product is the first CART therapy to come before the FDA, leading a pack of novel treatments that promises to change the standard of care for certain aggressive blood cancers. Novartis therapy is approved to treat children and young adults with relapsed acute lymphoblastic leukemia. It will be marketed as Chimera. The price tag? Well, this is America after all. So you'll be pleased to know that it is well below expectations. The price tag? $475,000 for a course of treatment. A staggering amount by any rational measure of money.
What about the alt-left that came charging at the, as you say, the alt-right?
I want to talk about the so-called alt-left for a bit, because the alt-left was a term I was hearing before Stephen Miller fed it into the teleprompter for Donald Trump to stumble over in another racist diatribe. Or perhaps it was food fed to him like the baby he is from our state media, Fox quote news unquote. It was originally a term that the left was throwing around, mostly in reference to the Bernie Bros. I guess Sean Hannity and other fringier monsters of the far-right media ecosystem have been using it for at least a year now, pushing the idea that the alt-left has some sort of answer to the alt-right, which is a very real political entity.
I know you are, but what am I?
Gotta love the GOP intellectuals and moral giants. The thing is, there really is a growing movement on the left that Donald could be referring to, but it in no way, shape, or form can be equated to the neo-Nazis. They are called Antifa.
Oh, anti-fascist. Antifa. First of all, that's a great name. It's short, it's punchy, excuse the pun, and most importantly, you don't have to know how to spell fascist. I like that.
Trevor Noah.
Sean McCreesh did a history in Rolling Stone for us on it. And he says that anti-fascism originated in the years leading up to the Second World War as a means to fight the spread of fascism across Europe. But in America, the progenitors of what Trump would have you call the alt-left can be traced back to the 1980s in Minnesota. It was during this time that a group called Anti-Racist Action sprung up around the Twin Cities to combat the rise of local Nazi skinheads. ARA, as the group became known, opened chapters across the U.S. and won some major victories against neo-Nazis in the pre-internet 80s and 90s. Underground, local punk scenes often served as the stage for these groups to do battle, but the scale and frequency with which they clashed was enough to seep into popular culture throughout the decade. It ultimately culminated with the 1998's American History X, for which Edward Norton was nominated for an Academy Award for his performance as a reformed neo-Nazi skinhead. By the mid-2000s, it started to peter out. But now, the ranks to white supremacists, newfound confidence to step out into the public, the old ARA-style groups have made a comeback, rebranded in the age of Trump, using the Antifa name instead of Anti-Racist Action. And a lot of those groups started to get going in 2011, 2012, and 2013. It was also around this time that white supremacist Richard Spencer coined the term alt-right. The rise of that movement served as an accelerant to the nascent Antifa groups to explain what Trump refers to today. There are hundreds, likely thousands, of active anti-fascist or Antifa, as they are so called. Although it is hard to pin down exactly the number because the movement is so fragmentary and purposely decentralized. There is no Richard Spencer, no Milo Yiannopoulos equivalent within their movement. And anonymity is perhaps their central tenet. Antifa is organized in hyperlocal crews of 8 or 12 that they call affinity groups as a way to protect against being infiltrated. New York, Atlanta, Portland, Oregon, and Philly are known to be particularly active hubs. They use black bloc tactic, wherein multiple affinity groups dressed head to toe in black converge upon a public demonstration where white supremacists are known to be. Black bloc exists to cause mayhem and are known to leave a trail of destruction and sometimes violence in their wake.
The world got a glimpse of these tactics in action when some clad all in black smashed the windows of a Starbucks in a Bank of America.
You've got these Antifa members who believe that smashing is all they should do. Others want to expose neo-Nazis, and part of Antifa has only been about video games. But the part that's been causing the most headaches is the one that's hitting people in the head.
Their numbers were growing before Charlottesville, but that day served as a watershed moment that really filled their ranks.
You see, now, here's the real problem. It doesn't matter what your noble goal may be. It doesn't matter what you say you're fighting for. When people see that, all they think is, oh, it's vegan ISIS. Because you don't realize when you think you're punching Nazis, you don't realize that you're also punching your cause. Because your opponents, they'll just use every violent incident to discredit your entire movement, and they make it seem like in a world where white supremacists have a friend in the White House, the real problem is you guys.
Okay, before I go, the Fourth National Climate Assessment has given Hurricane Harvey a promotion. Congratulations, Harvey! You are no longer a 500-year event. You are now a 1,000-year event.
You win!
Now, I thought that meant that this is an event that happens once every 1,000 years, but that's not exactly it. What it means is there is 1 in 1,000 chance of that happening in any given year. So that's kind of like winning the lotto. Well, a small lotto. And while Texas is underwater, some other places around the globe are giving Harvey a run for its money. In terms of scale and human costs, it pales in comparison with many worldwide disasters. Heavy monsoon rains have brought Mumbai to a halt, and the worst floods to strike South Asia in years continue to exact a deadly toll. More than 1,200 people have died across India, Bangladesh, and Nepal as a result of flooding. More than 40 million affected by the devastation, and floods have also destroyed or damaged 1,800 schools, meaning that about 1.8 million children cannot go to classes, save the children warned on Thursday that hundreds of thousands of children could fall permanently out of the school system if education was not prioritized in the relief efforts. The rains have been falling in the Middle East and Africa as well. In Yemen, monsoon rainfall and flooding has killed at least 18 people as of last Wednesday. Dozens more were reported missing in the war-torn country, where floodwaters have risen to a staggering 12 feet in some areas. Officials in Sierra Leone estimated that recent flooding and mudslides have claimed more than 1,000 lives there, and over 450 deaths have been confirmed. What's more, it's wildfire season. See, 2010 was a terrible year for California. This season could be catastrophic. A total of more than 5,000 fires have burned 460,000 acres already. In Oregon, 4,500 people have been evacuated due to fires. Then there are fires in Montana and Canada. According to the UN Office for Coordination and Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, a record 141.1 million people in 37 countries are currently in need of humanitarian aid, an increase of 12.5 million on last year's total. An estimated 23.5 billion is needed this year to fund assistance efforts, but so far, only 6.2 billion, 26% of that total, has been raised. As many as 20 million people are at risk of famine across the Northeast, Nigeria, Somalia, South Sudan, and Yemen. Five flash appeals have been launched in 2017 to respond to the devastation caused by the drought in Kenya, by tropical cyclones in Inawal and Madagascar, in Dino, in Mozambique, and by flooding in Peru. As many as 20 million people are at risk of famine across Northeast Nigeria, Somalia, South Sudan, and Yemen. It is unfathomable, isn't it? And in any real sense, anyway. Is it hard sometimes to not fear that this is the beginning of the end? I don't know. Just thoughts. I'm going to leave the show with a quote from Malcolm X. Quote, "I'm for truth, no matter who tells it. I'm for justice, no matter who it is for or against. I'm a human being, first and foremost, and as such, I'm for whoever and whatever benefits humanity as a whole." Malcolm X. Thank you for listening to my show. You can find my show on crabdiving.com, that's crabdiving.com, under the K-Voice tab. Listen to the other great shows on the network, especially The Crabs, for their show 5 days a week, streaming live from 2 to 4. Or you can catch their show Crab Diving as a podcast. Follow me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice and on Facebook at K-Voice of Resistance. You can also find my show on Citizen Truth at citizentruth.org. All right, guys. I hope everybody's well out there. Please take care of yourself. Be safe. And as always, resist.
Girl looks at the brilliant stars, dreams that she'll discover new ones, sketches planetary arcs, fascinated by their movements, peeling back truth's thick skin in all its endless iterations, seeking where facts begin. Data sets and calculations.
A little boy wants to find out why bees around the world are dying. Worried for the chain of life.